One of the things, have you ever watched, anyone ever watched a documentary about 9/11? There are several of them. What's the first scene in every documentary about 9/11?
The tower still
standing against the backdrop of a beautiful sunny day. That's what everyone remembers. Everyone who was there, everyone who was alive at that time, remembers that it was a beautiful day. It was a beautiful sunny day. And that's always how it starts. It was a beautiful morning. And there's something to that. There's something about presenting such a tragedy in that light, because there's this contrast of this beautiful, cheerful day and the gravity of the tragedy that followed it. And the day of the death of Nadav and Avihu was an even more beautiful, cheerful day. It was something that was a day of great, great joy for the Jewish people. It was the day of the inauguration of the Mishkan. That's where we provided a Makom Hashraas HaShchinah. All that work that went into making the Mishkan, it finally came to fruition. It was a time of great joy for everybody, but greater joy for the one who was charged with being the CEO of the Mishkan, with running the whole place. And who's that? Aaron HaKohen. So the day of his greatest joy, the day that was supposed to be his greatest joy. In fact, we don't say Tachnun throughout Chodesh Nisan, right? And that's like, is there anything happier in Judaism than not saying Tachnun throughout Chodesh Nisan? It's like, you know, you're thinking on Thursday Tachnun now, this morning, how many more long Tachnuns till Nisan starts, right? When's Rosh Chodesh exactly, right? So we don't say Tachnun with Chodesh Nisan. And because of the joy of that day, because of the Chanukah Samishka, right? That's what it was. Still, centuries later, that's how special this time was. You know, a lot of people don't even realize why we don't say Tachanun. We just know that we don't say Tachanun, and we know that we're happy about it. But that's why. And against that backdrop, that's where tragedy struck. That's where Aaron HaKohen lost half of his children. That's where his family was forever changed. So there's got to be some message of that contrast. The message not just of the tragedy, but of the contrast within which the tragedy occurs. The contrast between what should have been his best day and what turned out to be something that he's known, Aaron HaKohen is known forever as a hero for being able to vayidom, just being able to be silent in the face of such great tragedy. Now, on one message, on just on the simplest level, might be that sharp contrasts tend to get noticed more. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes statements all the time for us to hear, for us to listen to, but he does so emphatically through the jarring and the unexpected. Statements are always there. We tend to hear them. We tend to be more attuned to them when it's something that really just shakes you, when it's something that was out of nowhere, out of the blue, something that was totally unexpected. The birth of the State of Israel would have been a miracle in any generation in history, pretty much, since the time of Chorban Bayis, of Chorban Bayis Sheni. The birth of the State of Israel would have been miraculous at any time. But on the heels of the Holocaust, its meaning took on a special significance. It became an entirely different kind of lift, an entirely different kind of boost, an entirely different kind of statement from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The celebration that we annually observe of Israel's independence would be uplifting whenever it would be. But it's that much more special the way it's observed in Israel on the heels of Yom HaZikaron. Right? To go from the somber mood of Yom HaZikaron into Yom HaTzmud. For us, B'nai Chutz La'aretz, we don't even really understand what that is, what that feels like. For those who learned in a Hasdi Yeshiva, maybe a little bit. Maybe you have a little bit of an inkling of what that feels like. But there's something about that. Contrasts have a way of making an impact the way nothing else can. And sometimes there are moments when you just feel like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying that he wants us to take notice, that he wants us to realize something when there's a time of tremendous contrast. Remember last Pesach, there was a terrible, terrible tragedy that occurred when on Chol HaMoed Pesach, in my neck of the woods, in the Five Towns area, a chassan and a kala coming from one of their parents' homes, driving late at night, got into a terrible accident and were both killed. a time of their lives where there should have been so much excitement, so much joy, so much, you know, to look forward to, and that at a time of Zman Chirusenu, of Simchas Yantif, and everything, you know, all of that going in one direction, and then all of a sudden, like that, tremendous, tremendous tragedy. And just in the past day or so, I got a couple of unfortunate email announcements of patiras of people very, very young, very, very shocking, very, very sudden. Just at a time when the sun is starting to shine, and you know you're gonna smell the cracker jacks and hear the crack of the bat, and like, you know, there's everything just looks a little bit more cheerful. And just at a time like that, Rachmana Litzlan, there's something that demands that we take notice. So I want to share with you is essentially three messages from these contrasts. One is as follows. One of the birds that the Torah identifies as being a non-kosher bird. The Torah doesn't really identify the kosher ones. One of the ones that the Torah identifies being a not kosher bird is the stork, or what we translate as the stork. Now, what is a stork? So the stork is best known as the bird that buys parents more time before they actually have to explain to their kids where babies come from. The conversation goes, parents would say that the stork brings the baby, and because the reason they chose the stork for that important job was because the stork migrates and comes back after a long time. Right, so where'd it go? Oh, it went to find, you know, to the baby farm and to pick up the baby. Till the kid's like, wait a second, where does mommy's belly fit into this? You know, fit into this picture. So okay, inachinami. So once he's smart enough to ask that question, so usually by the time the kids would ask again, they'd already have learned everything they need to know from the kid with the older brother on the school bus. So they already have it all figured out. And then, but in addition to that, the stork has another characteristic. There's something else, believe it or not, something else about the stork. Chazal explained what's it called in Hebrew. What's it called in Hebrew? The chasida. Right. Why? Because it does chesed with those that are close to it. So there's a famous Dvar Torah that's attributed to the Chidushei Arim that's been repeated often because the truth of it resonates with the Jewish people. Sometimes things get repeated often because it's a cute gematria, just whatever, it's weird. This gets repeated because it's resonant. Why would a chasida that is kind to its friends not be a kosher bird? You would think that's a characteristic that is worthy of emulation. So the Chidush Arim supposedly said that the problem with the chasida is that she is only kind to her friends and is not kind to anybody else. The stork notices when her friend is in need, but does not notice when anybody else is in need. That is treif. That is not a Jewish value. The Jewish people do not only notice when our family suffers, when someone very close to us suffers, but we take notice when tragedy strikes anywhere in our nation. There might be people who we never met, people who we don't know personally, but the suffering of another Jewish family, wherever they may be and whoever they may be, is reason for us to take notice. It becomes our struggle as well. So message number one of these stark contrasts, the kind that was experienced last Pesach, the kind that we hear about all too often, is that no matter who they happen to, we have to take notice. We can't just let it go. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is knocking on the door, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is getting our attention. Like we said, sometimes it's a very slight knock and you can barely hear it. But sometimes, using that tool of contrast, it's such a loud knock that you can't help but take notice. Taking notice, though, means more than feeling the pain of others. There's a certain kind of, and this is message number two, a certain kind of survivor's guilt, a healthy kind of survivor's guilt that comes with it. When Aaron hesitated to approach the Mizbeach for the first time, Rashi tells us that Moshe encouraged him, right? Moshe told him, Lama atabosh, why are you embarrassed? L'kach nifcharta. This is what you were chosen for. So Gedol Yisrael have always been perplexed by that phrase, L'kach nifcharta, for this you were chosen. Sfas Emes has a magnificent explanation of that phrase. It says, the reason you, Aaron, were chosen for this job was your ability to bring people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How did Aaron do it? How is Aaron Makarva the Torah? How did Aaron manage to bring people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? He was in Oev Es Abrios, so Makarva the Torah. The Mishnah tells us Aaron would befriend people. he would cause them to think how unworthy they were of a friendship with the great Aaron HaKohen, with a person of his stature. It was embarrassing for them to continue a friendship unless they improved themselves. If he only knew what I was really like, he would never want to be friends with a guy like me, so I better step up a little bit. And sometimes you have this in a marriage. Like a guy's like, I can't believe this girl married me. I better be the man that she wants me to be. I better step up and be the person that she deserves. So he used their busha in being unworthy as a tool for closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Moshe tells Aaron HaKohen, says the Sfas, that this exact feeling of busha, what you're feeling right now, Aaron, that you feel unworthy to represent Klal Yisrael, to approach the Mizbech, that feeling of busha is the very midah that you knew how to harness in others in order to bring them close. Lekach nivcharta. That's why you were chosen to be the Kohen Gadol, because you recognize that feeling. You know how valuable that feeling is. You know how it could be used as an impetus for growth, not as like a crushing, what am I, I'm never going to be, I can't move on. No, lekach nivcharta. It's an impetus for growth. We all go through times where we feel unworthy, where we feel like life is a struggle. But that's the point. That we're supposed to get up, and we're supposed to realize that this is something that should, that if we feel that we haven't lived up to what we should be, so we should use that as motivation to be better. I just saw in the recent Jewish Action that just came out for Pesach, they said, Rav Moshe Weinberger quoted Ravolbi. The Ravolbi said, "Rabbos machshavos b'lev ish v'atzas Hashem hi sapum." So normally we assume that means, and it does mean, that man plans and God laughs, right? That man has a lot of plans, Rabbos Machshavos B'lev Ish, but you can only accomplish what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to accomplish. Rav Volbi had like a Hasidish explanation of it almost. Hasidish explanation is usually just move the comma, right? You move the comma in the sentence and then it means something else entirely. So Rabbos Machshavos B'lev Ish, that a person feels like unworthy very often. He feels feelings of depression, feelings of anxiety, feelings of why is it worth it? Why is life even worth it? V'atzas Hashem hi, but the Atzas Hashem, if you can listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's advice, takum, is get up. Let it inspire you. You should do something with it. Someone else told me, Rabbi Eli Storch said to me that he always thought pshat was that right after you have a baby, right? So it's the middle of the night, the baby's crying. So you start thinking, maybe I should be a good husband. Maybe I should get up in the middle of the night. Rabbos Machshavos B'lev Ish. You have a lot of it. Ratzas Hashem, hi takum. Let her get up. Not halacha l'maisa. But Rabbi Weinberger's vart is, Rav Volbi's vart, I think, is a very powerful vart. Whether that's pshat or the pasuk, it's the truth. That to use these things as a motivation. And when tragedy strikes, beautiful, erlich, from families, and we take notice, of course we take notice, but it's more than that. We should have a certain sense of survivor's guilt. Meaning, we would never be foolish enough to be posach pel satan and say, why does it happen to them and not to me? We would never say something like that, because you can't. You're not supposed to say things like that. But we should appreciate how we have been the recipients of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's unending kindness, and appreciate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kindness has been showered upon us in a way that is beyond the level that we probably deserve. To have that sense of busha, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why are you being so good to me? I want to become better. I want to become worthy of all the goodness that you are giving to me, of everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing for us. It's humbling. It's humiliating, actually. More than humbling. And we should take steps to close that gap a little bit. There's an amazing word in the Torah that describes Aaron's other children. What does it say? Vayadaber Moshe al Aaron ve'el Azar ve'el Isamar banav hanosarim. They're the nosarim, often translated as the leftovers, but more accurately translated as survivors. Now that's a little bit strange, right? Survivors of the Holocaust are survivors. Why are they survivors? Because they went through the Holocaust and they survived it. The threat against them was as great as it was against anybody else. And they managed to live. That's surviving. But if some person dies of some whatever, illness or whatever, what, I'm a survivor because I don't have that illness? Meaning a person is a cancer survivor when they had cancer and they survived. But if they simply never had the illness in the first place, then they're not a survivor, they're just a person who happens to still be around. Because they never had that problem. What made Elazar and Isamar survivors? Their brothers died, they didn't. But maybe the point is that this was not a gezeira that was threatened, that threatened only the two sons of Aaron. Rashi derives from that word, Hanosarim, Af aleihem niknisa misa alavona egel, that they also had a gzardin of misa because of the egel. They were survivors because by right Hashem could have taken them also. They could have just as easily been targeted as the other two. When a tragedy happens and we take notice and we contemplate with that sense of busha in our own brachos, in our own things that we have going for us, we can think of ourselves, and we should think of ourselves, as survivors. Because it could have just as easily been any of us. It's hard to believe that we are somehow better or more worthy of living than those who don't have such fortune. We were simply spared. We don't know why. I just spoke to my grandfather this morning. My grandfather, I mentioned to you earlier this week, my grandfather became a great-great-grandfather. He got to see a fifth generation. So, Bli Ayin Hara. I couldn't reach him earlier because he was running out to his shir and then to Mincha and then, so not only is he a great-great-grandfather, but he's sitting there running out to shul and learning through three shiurim, and he's on his sixth cycle of Daf Yomi, and he's, finishing Shas Mishnayis every month, and this is what he does in his retirement, right? But still doing. And I can't tell how often he tells me that the Ribbono Shel Olam owes me nothing. I would go through Auschwitz again to experience the bracha that I've experienced since then. He owes me nothing. Because he's seen, why did I survive? And am I better than I don't remember even how many, my 11 siblings who didn't survive? Am I any better than them? Did I deserve more? So yeah, to use that as a motivation to build, as a motivation to make something, as a motivation to come closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then a third piece of the puzzle. We take notice, we feel a certain sense of survivor's guilt, a certain sense of shame that the Ribbono Shel Olam is so good to us. And then we have to find our mission. Then we have to find what we're supposed to be doing. Meaning if we are here by the grace of God, and he's put us here to do something, we have to figure out what that is. And that's the trick, that's the whole trick of life. That's the hardest to figure out. There's no clear, easy answers. Rashi writes that the schar Aaron received for remaining silent for Vayidom Aaron was Shenis Yachid Imo Hadibu, Shenamar Lo Levado Parsha Shui Yayin. Hashem gave him an individualized mission. It wasn't shared with anybody else. Rav Pinchas Weinberger, the Shemin HaTov. Rav Pinchas Weinberger, what was his name? The Shemin HaTov? Rav Weinberger or something. It was definitely Rav Weinberger. I don't remember his name. Rav Pinchas Weinberger is a rabbi from Teaneck. No, I don't remember what Shemin HaTov's name is. But it's Rabbi Weinberger. Shemin HaTov explains that after suffering a tragedy, people often feel that life is meaningless, that there's nothing to contribute to the world. The greatest sense of nechama that's possible is a life of meaning, is a mission that comes directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? If a person really feels that they suffered something, And then they feel like they have to be on a mission. You know, the most impactful, my shul generally tries to be somewhat active in getting guest speakers and inspiring people and talmidei chachamim to share Torah. The most impactful speech we ever had, by far, I think, the most impactful person we ever brought in to speak was the father of the chassan and kala we spoke about before, the father of that chassan, Mr. Shai Levine. Levine, I'm not even sure I pronounce it. And what he essentially did is he took this horrific tragedy. I mean, horrific in the sense that he lost two children. This was the second child that he lost. And horrific, horrific tragedy. And he took it as like a mission. He just decided that he's going to go on a mission. So he started this program called 10K Batei Yisrael, where he wants to make 10,000 shiduchim. And he's well on his way. You know, I thought that was crazy when he said, I said, you know, I started a thing in my shul, the Zecher Nishma, Sechas and the Kala, we should make 10,000 meaningful brachas. You know, people signed up from a 4-year-old to an 84-year-old signing up. I'm going to say Hamapil with more Kavana. I'm going to say Asher Yatzar with more Kavana. I'm going to say Alamichya at all. You know, like things like that, right? I thought that's reasonable. We can produce 10,000 brachas. And we did, thank God, we did. Hopefully we produced more than 10,000 brachas. I thought this was crazy. 10,000 shiduchim, are you nuts? How are you ever going to do that? But he found his mission. You know, Rabbi Yisrael Reisman Shlita said in the aftermath of that tragedy, he pointed out that at the Levaya of that Chasan and Kala, this father got up and made demands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He spoke in a way that would be totally inappropriate for us, but is totally appropriate when dealing with that kind of tzara. And he demanded, he said, I want 10,000. He started demanding 10,000 things. I want, he said, 10,000 for Shalemus for Chalei Yisrael, Ribbono Shalom. Ribbono Shalom, I want 10,000 shidduchim. I want 10,000 people to be strengthened in Emunah and Bitachon. We can't really provide those things. Only a Kodesh Baruch Hu can. But he decided, yes, we can. We can make a Hishtadlus to provide those things. So Rav Reisman pointed out that in general, we shouldn't take on things that are too big, because then we won't do it. And we shouldn't take on things that we already do, because that lacks value, that lacks meaning. Right, but we need to take on some sort of mission. Now, when you're a person like that who was struck so directly by such a tragedy, he was able to take on something gigantic, and he's working toward it. For us, when something happens that should shake us up, remember that was step one, to take notice, contrasts, to realize when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is knocking, and he's knocking hard sometimes, to take notice. And when we feel that healthy sense of survivor's guilt, of Ribbono Shel Olam, I have so many brachas in my life, I want to close the gap a little bit between what I deserve and what I actually get, and we therefore find a mission, find that which we should be doing, so that's where we need a Kabbalah. That's where we need to actually take some concrete step, tiny, tiny concrete step. But just to show the Ribbono Shel Olam, yes, we do appreciate all the kindness. And we don't know how long it lasts, and we don't know when it starts, when it stops, and how long. We don't know. Maybe we should all be zocha to be great-great-grandfathers, right? We hope that we're all zocha to that. We don't know, though. We don't know. Life is very, very uncertain. But in the meantime, we're going to show the Ribbono Shel Olam that we have that sense of understanding of what a bracha really is. So dafka, as the weather gets warmer, dafka, as the Yetzer Hara gets a little stronger, dafka, as Ben Hazmanim approaches, dafka is we're a little bit out of our normal, daily schedule. Dafka then, a little extra Kabbalah. Maybe noticing in advance where we tend to falter a little bit. Maybe when we're around the house a little bit more with our families, maybe we tend to be a little less loving toward our siblings because it's easy to love them when you don't have to see them all the time. You know, or maybe a little... We're not as respectful of our parents because, sometimes it's because I'm a Ben Torah. I planned a month off, Chas V'Shalom, a month off. I'm going to learn two Siddurim a day or whatever. But then my mother's asking me to go get the car clean for Pesach. Come on, doesn't she know I'm busy? How does she not respect the fact that I'm busy? I mean, doesn't she see I'm running to learn and to go to the late Shacharis? And, doesn't she see that I'm kind of busy? So we have to plan, we have to realize that if that's where we struggle, if that's where we haven't been our best, so plan ahead how we're going to be our best in these areas. Ben Adam L'Chavero and Be'ez Hashem Ben Adam L'Makom. And we should experience the Chag HaGeula, which is coming soon, Be'ezras Hashem, in a way that makes HaKadosh Baruch Hu want to bring the actual Geula, where there won't be any contrast. The only contrast will be the galus that used to be and the Geula that Klal Yisrael is ultimately going to experience. Okay.